the latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Sermon Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
When you're dressing up, still it's not enough.
Back at the races. 15 before, I should say, the hour. And Grand Motion at about 11:15 Eastern right now. John White swings into action. Help us kind of summarize and tie up the Del Mar meet. And John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good to be with you. Before we dive into Del Mar, I just wanted to mention that the Washington Racing Hall of Fame announced their class of 2019, and there were three inductees this year. One of them was Snowplow, a big fan of the Steve Bick Show, a frequent listener to your program. His trainer, Leon Lucewicz, is one of your most popular guests when you have him on.
Yeah.
And he trained Snowplow, and this is a filly who was a multiple Grade 1 winner back in 1981. She was named the Washington Horse of the Year in 1981. She won the Demoiselle when it was a Grade 1 and the Salima when it was a Grade 1. She was the first Washington-bred Grade 1 winner in history. and she is one of the three inductees. Ruth Parton, who was quite amazing. She was the first woman in the history of American racing to obtain a trainer's license, and she was quite an all-around horsewoman. She was very accomplished in relays and rodeos. She won her first race as a trainer on August 20th, 1933, when she trained a winner at Long Acres only 17 days after the opening of that track. And then also going into the Hall of Fame this year, is that for the breeding category, is Griffin Farm, which has done extremely well as, in terms of breeders in the state of Washington. And in fact, they bred the 2000 Washington Horse of the Year Rings of Chime. So wanted to mention that because of Blue is such a listener to your show, and I absolutely love it when he is on your show.
He's the greatest. I only got to see him once all summer long. Lucky enough, actually, you know, given how little I was able to go to the track, I ran into him. It must have actually been that weekend, maybe even that Sunday before, you know, the next day when all this started at the end of July. So he'll be thrilled. And if he isn't listening right this minute, we'll have to give Blue a call and let him know. If nobody, you know, anybody that's listening wants to reach Blue, let him know. Snowplow into the Washington Hall of Fame. That's very cool.
So, quite an interesting Del Mar fraternity yesterday, needless to say. And you mentioned the safety in terms of the racing at Del Mar this summer, and obviously that really is the big story considering what happened earlier this year at Santa Anita. And actually, if you combine it with the Los Alamitos thoroughbred meet that came between Santa Anita and Del Mar, we've had back-to-back meets on the Southern California circuit without anything untoward happening in the afternoon during the races. So even more than Del Mar, we've gone all the way since the end of the Santa Anita meet, knock on wood, without any hiccups.
That's a great point. I'm glad you included Los Al in it, because it certainly notable as a deep, safe surface as well, and they'll get another swing here. John, you mentioned, I guess we'll start with the Futurity and work our way back. Of course, the Futurity, the last race, the last stake of the season at Del Mar. And that figure that I had sent out earlier this morning, the raw figure had been a 59, and the final figure ends up being a 68, which sort of speaks to the likelihood that if Eight Rings makes his way fully around the racetrack, that he would have dominated this. Baffert will have to regroup and figure out, you know, I suppose the American Pharoah, but I'm sure he didn't want to turn him with this second start.
Well, I will say this. Of course, he didn't have any weight on his back, but Eight Rings ran around there and had a lot of energy, so at least he got a little bit out of this. But what a freaky thing, and you can't help but feel bad for the horse to his inside, Storm the Court, who was just an innocent victim in this thing, really. And, I mean, considering he had defeated Garth last time out, I mean, who's to say what maybe Storm the Court would have been able to do in this race? You talk about buyer speed figures. I looked up the figure for Garth. It's not too many Bob Baffert trainees that you're going to see get a 12 buyer. I mean, boy, you talk about somebody that just backpedaled from the quarter pole. Because one thing about it, once this incident happened and Garth got the lead, considering how highly regarded Garth is, I kind of figured, well, we're going to see if this Garth will live up to the hype that he's had, and he certainly did not. So they'll have to go back to the drawing board with Garth. But, you know, it's interesting that it's one reason I really love listening to your recap of the week on Monday morning, Steve. I mean, it's listening for racing fans to me, because you do such a superlative job of highlighting what has happened in the past week. And you made a great observation in terms of the two big two-year-old male races, the Hopeful at Saratoga and the Del Mar Futurity, because with the green light go scratched from the Hopeful, that opened the door for a 1-2-3 finish for Hall of Fame trainer Steve Asmussen. And then at Del Mar, when Eight Rings unseated the rider, that opened the door for Peter Miller, one of the top trainers on our Southern California circuit, to finish 1-2 in the Del Mar Futurity. And considering the success that Peter Miller has had, especially at Del Mar, it was a little surprising to me that this was his first Del Mar Futurity. On the other hand, the minute I think, well, it's surprising that it's Miller's first Del Mar Futurity, then you remember that Baffert's won it a record 14 times,
yeah,
and I've
exactly.
done the research, and according to my research, no trainer has dominated any of the current Grade 1 races in American racing to the extent that Baffert has in winning that race 14 times. The next most dominance in a Grade 1 race is 9, which is D. Wayne Lucas in the Del Mar Debutante, and also Charlie Whittingham in the Santa Anita Handicap are a couple of the 9. So, but, you know, for Peter Miller, this, while it was only a 68 buyer, they'll take that Grade 1 victory, and they'll take the money and move forward. And I'm kind of happy, too, for Rockingham Ranch. Gary Hartunian puts a lot of money into this game. He's an enthusiastic owner. And so for him to get this Del Mar Futurity win, I think is a good thing, too.
Yeah, and, you know, everybody coming out of the race, you know, will get a chance to, you know, to reboot and, you know, luckily, you know, come out unscathed from an injury standpoint. Let's talk about the main track. We'll circle back to the turf racing because, of course, Baffert in the debutante with Bast, and here's Bioma, the Chews, with another nice horse, and their program. You know, very on a very regular basis, they keep coming up with stake horses.
Well, this is a Uncle Mo filly who ran nicely first time out. In fact, I mean, she was the runner-up behind Inspiresa, who was sent off as the debutante favorite. But with the addition of Blinkers, a race under her belt, Bass moved forward off of the debut and turned the tables and did so big time on Inspiresa. And won by a big, big margin, almost 9 lengths, 85 buyer for her. So I move forward with the Blinkers, and she'll no doubt move on next time out to the Chandelier. And she's got to be considered one of the major players now for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. And, you know, Uncle Mo gets yet another Grade 1 winner here with Bast.
I got to mention too the race before. If people didn't you know, weren't watching all the Del Mar action right before the debutante on Saturday, George Papapodromo and Bruce Kretz sent out a firster, an American Pharaoh Ridgeling, American Theorem, and this is a serious horse. Came back with I think an 80 something buyer. And I thought that was a pretty darn impressive debut. Beat it took money. It's not as if this horse was a, you know, an unknown quantity that, you know, kind of jumped in out of nowhere. But it was favored over Hydrogen, who had come off that, you know, the solid debut. But American Theorem, George Papapodromo, who comes up with a nice horse here and there.
What really impressed me about him was the way he won that race in terms of, you know, instead of racing greenly, or, I mean, he was kind of bottled up and so forth, and you used the word serious. I agree with you. I think that's the perfect word to use to describe him. I think he is a serious 2-year-old. So a lot to like there. American Pharaoh's doing well, I think, as a sire. I'll tell you mentioned the sire that's absolutely just amazing really right now is that Constitution.
Yeah.
And that Governor Morris, I'll tell you what, that was about as impressive. Governor Morris and Express Train were the two this week that I kind of come away really impressed with in terms of exiting the maiden ranks in victories. For Governor Morris, it was his debut on the sloppy track. For Express Train, it's another sign that you would think that Eight Rings would have won the Del Mar Futurity had he not unseated Van Dyke early, because he beat Express Train first time out, and then Express Train came back for John Sheriffs and just absolutely creamed the competition around two turns, going a mile, winning by a little more than 14 lengths under Mike Smith. So, and that's a Union Rags out of a mineshaft mare. So a lot to like for Express Train for John Sheriffs, and certainly a lot to like for Todd Pletcher with that Governor Morris. I mean, boy, and you mentioned the gallop out. I mean, I noticed for what I could see of the gallop out that it was impressive for him, but evidently was even better than I realized. So that was another interesting observation on your part for the gallop out of that. And boy, how about a powerful ownership partnership there between Valor and Windstar?
There's more and more of that going on. I'm glad you mentioned Express Train, the Union Rags that won at a mile, breaking the maiden. That was what, last Wednesday, I think, for John Sheriffs. I'm looking forward to talking to John Sheriffs, because we can segue with Express Train to Knowles' performance in the Del Mar Derby. And that was one of our races for the Beat Pick Challenge. And of course, yesterday I ended up scratching away. My pick had been, I don't know why I did that on the last go round, green light go, but hopefully it opened the door for some of the players to go ahead and pick Basin and potentially win, because my scratch horse, I scratched into Godzilla as the alternate horse. So we'll get some numbers probably tomorrow or Thursday, and get everybody updated and make sure everybody's set for the Challenge Championship, which will come on the 14th. But the Sunday race was the Del Mar Derby, and I was trying to project Nolo Contesto, John, second time turf, and I thought he'd run well in that turf try, and I'd love the way he worked subsequently, and Flavian Pratt gives you a little added incentive. But in fact, Noldy, this was an authoritative performance, I thought, and John Sheriffs had a very solid summer, virtually in all levels, from 2-year-old maidens up to, more veteran horses, and his barn has come alive here in the middle part of the year.
Well, I got a phone call from Frank Marimani, my good friend, who is the track announcer at Santa Anita and currently at Monmouth Park. And this was after Nolde's maiden win, when he came back in June in an allowance optional climbing race at a mile on the turf at Santa Anita. And before that allowance optional climbing race, Frank was telling me that he thought that this was the horse that would win the Del Mar Derby. So he predicted this back in June. And Noldy won that allowance optional claiming race. He did so really stylishly on that occasion. And then he was a tough luck loser in that Oceanside. I mean, just got nosed out of that victory there. And came back and did indeed win the Del Mar Derby. So kudos to Frank Marimani, because that's pretty good that he predicted that back in June, that would be the Del Mar Derby winner. And indeed, that turned out to be the case. And
I'm laughing. John, I got to stop. I'm laughing because I got a call from Frank Marimani. Of course, my call.
Maybe the entire world might have.
Well, this was not after the allowance win. This was after, or maiden win. This was after he saw a post that I made regarding Rachel Alexandra on Facebook, and he called us about 11:15 on Saturday night, as Tina and I, the racing was winding down at Del Mar, and Tina and I were, getting in bed. And Frank apologized for the late call. He then harangued me about telling me how Zenyatta would have beaten Rachel at any distance, on any racetrack, anywhere. So first he admonished me for saying something nice about Rachel and the Woodward. I put up a really cool picture Saturday on Woodward Day. Then he proceeded to tell me how, Noldy is winning the Del Mar Derby tomorrow. He was less prescient about a 2-year-old race at Saratoga, but he absolutely was sky high on Noldy's chances. Then he proceeded to do about 3 different impressions for me on the phone, which were very funny. Then he let me go to sleep.
Well, and it's certainly nice to see Victor Espinoza winning, big races like the Del Mar Derby, considering about a year ago, the jury was out, really, whether Victor Espinoza would ever be riding again, quite frankly.
Yep.
So, to me, I just have a big smile on my face when I see Victor Espinoza in the winner's circle for any race these days and just riding, because that was scary what he went through last year, and it was touch and go there for him really to come back, and that's another nice aspect of this Noldy win to me.
What yesterday too? What on the import on the Irish horse that upset the juvenile filly turf yesterday? Yesterday once more for James Stack.
Yep. So, which makes me think of a Carpenter song that I liked back in the day. But it's really been a very good Del Mar meet overall. I know they're thrilled. And one thing that I think they did very smartly was in terms of David Jenkins, the racing secretary, under the leadership of Tom Robbins, who's one of the greatest racing officials really in racing history. Those guys put their heads together and really, to keep Del Mar going on a 5-day-a-week racing schedule, understood that the way to do that would be to cut down the number of races on those weekday cards. And look, I the other day I was talking to a person that is not a big-time racing fan. They just kind of go here and there, and they had gone to Del Mar, and they went to one of the 7 race cards, and they said, you know what, I kind of liked it. And I think that to a large extent, a lot of times, when you hold people at the track for these 12, 13, 14 race cards, and look, I get it from time to time, but I mean, when you get into these marathon cards and they just go on and on and on and on, I mean, there's something a little refreshing about a 7-race, 8-race card these days to me. And it's kind of nice. You get there and it's like you don't spend the entire day. You can do something else, like maybe have some dinner someplace or meet some friends or do whatever. So, but I think that was a huge key for Del Mar in terms of they did that and it worked beautifully because they still had pretty good field size considering the horse population we have in California, because we lost a lot of horses out of here after the Santa Anita meet. And, another thing Del Mar has done extremely smartly is that ship and win program, and that's been a huge success for a long time, but it really paid dividends this year. So my hat's off to Del Mar for what they did to hold such a successful meet this year.
Agreed, because there was real concern going in as to how interesting the cards might be and what they were going to do about field size. And David Jerkins with a tremendous job. A couple of other performances we got to talk about Sunday. In addition to the Derby win for Noldy, and looking forward to connecting with John Sheriffs, the Juvenile Turf winner, John Sadler. And again, the meet that John had, personal best in stake wins. I think I saw where Jay Pribman said it was his 9th stake win of the meet, the Juvenile Turf. Encoder, this is an English Channel colt, and a tremendous meet for Costa Aronis and the family. We'll see about this 2-year-old colt going forward. He's actually a May foal too, John. He's a late product.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's interesting too. And an English Channel, and boy, And I've said it before on your show. I'll say it again. Ronis Racing, what they've done, I mean, you just can't help but root for the guy, Costa and his brother, they're so classy, and they have been such a great addition to the Southern California racing scene here ever since they – and John Sadler, what can you say? I mean, here's a guy I've known going clear back to the early 1980s. You know, I really laugh, Steve, because I was thinking when he won the Pacific Classic again this year with Higher Power for back-to-back Pacific Classics at a mile and a quarter – there was a time in the 1980s when a lot of people were pigeonholing John Sadler as a sprinter trainer. In other words, they felt like, well, you know, he's not that great in terms of races, maybe at a mile or longer. And look at the guy. Wins the Breeders' Cup Classic, a couple of Pacific Classics and so forth. And, I mean, he's won races on the turf. And, I've always felt John Sadler is just an outstanding trainer. And I chuckle sometimes when handicappers and horse players and people just want to sometimes pigeonhole somebody and say, well, you know, that's I only like them when they're training sprinters, or only when they're training horses on the dirt, or, you know, that type of thing. And so I was kind of laughing because it's been a long, long time since I've heard that. But I'll tell you what, there was a number of years here in Southern California where that was a big, big thought on the part of a lot of people. That John Sadler, well, that's that good trainer of sprinters. Well, he's just a good trainer of everything.
Well, and one of the things that came out, I guess it was – well, I don't know when the conversation it probably had to do with Accelerate, but John's background coming from the show world, and you know, we just talked to Kelly Rubley. You know, Kelly came out of the arena as well, and when you compete with that kind of horse, when you grow up, Rich Migliori talks about this as well. When you get that complete education about a horse from the hooves up, and you're doing the grooming, and you know you're around them intimately from that, you know, from that standpoint, and you know too much. You know too much to not be successful and be able to translate a horse's talent and aptitude and try to maximize it. I mean, invariably, a trainer's, any successful trainer's statistics are going to be shaped by the kind of horses they get. And that's the kind of horses they get are going to be a reflection of the goals and direction of the owners that they're working with. And so it just so happens if you get a bunch of sprinty pedigrees and sprinty types and you have early success with those, you can understand why people thought, oh, this is a guy that, you know, that's only good with sprinters. Well, yeah, this is the thing, John. You've heard, you and I have discussed it before when it comes to Pletcher and how, you know, he got this silly reputation that he couldn't train a classic winner. When in fact he was taking horses with pedigrees that were meant for shorter and middle distance, and he was somehow getting them to the Derby, which was a basically an endorsement of how good a trainer he was, that he was, you know, earning enough, you know, graded stake money to get a bunch of horses like More Than Ready that had no business being in a mile and a quarter classic race, but he got them there because of how good a trainer he was. Those were the kinds of horses he got early. He had all these win early pedigrees. Those weren't horses that were supposed to win derbies. So, you know, that a lot of that stuff is silly. You know, it's, you know, initial impressions, but good trainers will get all kinds of good horses to win doing whatever they're meant to do.
Well, I remember people saying that, well, Dwayne Lucas, here's a guy, you know, he's just a dirt trainer. And then, you know, he trained Steinlin and you know, look, I know one of the greatest minds in the history of racing, sat there and was certainly willing to have Dwayne Lucas train for him with Codex. And if, you know, I mean, in other words, and look at Baffert. Baffert people sit there and you know, you make the point, Steve. It's a great point in terms of what you're going to do is a reflection of what your owners want to do. Baffert's owners, for the most part, want to be in the Triple Crown races. So, I mean, that isn't why. So when he goes to the sales or the people go to the sales to buy the horses for those owners, they're not buying marathon turf horses or sprinters, you know. So for the most part, that's, you know, Baffert's looking for the American Pharaohs and the Justifies. That's who he's looking for. And the, his particular clientele, that's what they're also looking for. So his barn is a reflection of that. That's a terrific point that you make on that, for sure. So, but like I say, for Sadler, that was the case for so long with the guy. And, you know, another thing about Sadler and Baffert that they have in common, I know this from Baffert because he's told me. I've never actually asked Sadler this, but so I'm going to make an assumption here. But I think, I know in the case of Baffert that he learned a lot being stabled right by Whittingham. And he observed Whittingham. And one thing about Baffert, people think, oh, you know, he's always joking and this and that. Well, that guy, he is always keeping an eye out for what he can learn about things and pick up things and how he can do things better. And I know that John Sadler, he was stabled near Lucas during the heyday of that powerful Lucas operation. And Sadler, I know, I have to believe, was also studying Whittingham, what he was doing in those days. Also probably Barrera in Southern California, like in the early 80s. So, you know, this is a thing where these trainers can really pick up a lot of things in terms of how to succeed in terms of watching how these other trainers succeed. One of the greatest things about this game to me, there's no one set way to train horses.
No.
Because Barrera trained horses so differently than Whittingham, and yet both of those guys had such success. And Lucas trained differently, too, coming from the quarter horse game. And, I mean, so, I mean, each guy's got his own way of doing things, but it's great that there isn't one set way to do it. And but yet I know the real top trainers incorporate certain things. In other words, obviously Todd Pletcher, being a former assistant to Lucas, picked up a lot of things from Lucas, and Chad Brown obviously has picked up a lot of things from his mentor Bobby Frankel and so forth. So, and look at the people that they're learning from, the Frankels, the Whittinghams, the Lucases, and the Barreras. I mean, you know, they're learning from the best this game has ever had.
Well, and you can see, particularly in Southern California, one thing that became very notable over the last couple of years is a couple different outfits, Sadler, one of them, Doug O'Neill, another, drilling their horses in a Baffert-like manner more and more. And, you know, guys that rarely, you very rarely saw four, you know, beyond 4 and 5 furlong published works, all of a sudden you started seeing 6 furlong published works and, you know, gallop outs to a mile. And I mean, I asked that question of Baffert a couple of years ago. I said, are you surprised that more people that, you know, that are in proximity and watching how you handle your horses aren't training them the way you do to some extent? And that includes, you know, 7 furlongs. And even if horses were designed to have a 5 furlong work, watching them gallop out, you know, all the way to the, you know, midway on the backstretch, essentially working every single time, even though they might publish a 5 furlong, they actually have worked probably 7 and in some cases even a mile. And that is something that I absolutely see it in the PPs looking at. And I've brought it up actually with John and with Doug O'Neill, if it is a reflection of watching how Baffert drills his horses. And the answer is obviously yes. And they're getting results. I mean, to me, it's, you know, it's one of those things we talk about with you know, the Super Bowl syndrome, where if a team, you know, wins a Super Bowl doing something, you know, with an offense or a defense that's innovative, you know, then all of a sudden everybody copies it. It's not, you know, it's why wouldn't you? I mean, if,
well,
if you have horses.
That's like the NBA is another prime example of that, because suddenly when you see, like, the Golden State Warriors succeeding with the outside shooting, then you all of a sudden see a bunch of teams saying, oh, well, that's what we need to do now. Or, you know, I mean, you've yeah. seen the ebbs and flows of how the NBA has approached things. So you're right, exactly, in the NFL and in the NBA both, that people start to try very hard to emulate whatever's yeah. been working. And that makes sense. Again, I mean, sure. that's not illogical at all. So, you know, it was interesting because in the 80s, when I was a reporter and columnist for the Forum, we would have to write what we used to call pre-race stakes advances, which we'd have to write three of those a week for the big races coming up on the weekend in Southern California. And it was our job to go around to the trainers to say, are you running? Who are you riding? And get these fields and give people an idea of the fields that were coming up and who would be riding. And I would be out clocking workouts with trainers and so forth. And the guy that was fascinating to me was Barrera, because if it was the 6 furlong Palos Verdes, I'd say, so are you going to run so-and-so in the Palos Verdes? Yes. Who's riding? And he'd say, Pinkeye. And I'd say, so is he going to work this week? And he'd say, yeah, he's going to work Tuesday. And I'd say, how far? And he'd go, well, he'll work 5/8. Now, a week later, I might be asking about a horse in the San Juan Capistrano, like... And I'd say, are you going to run so-and-so? And he'd say, yes. And I'd say, who's riding? He'd say, Pinkeye. And I'd say, how far are you going to work him? He'd say, 5/8. I mean, it was like it didn't matter what the context was. And so after about a year or two of this, I finally asked him, I said, why are you always working your horses 5 furlongs no matter what, practically? And I mean, there were exceptions, but I mean, boy, the vast majority were 5 furlongs. And he said, exactly what you were just saying, Steve, that there was more to the exercise that morning than just the actual work. In other words, the gallop out and what you did before the horse broke off in the work all played a role into what he was doing. But he liked the fact of the 5 furlong consistency in terms, he said, that gives me a real barometer of where I stand with a horse when the distance is always the same for that horse. And so that was kind of interesting to me. In other words, he really got a sense of how the horse was training into the race by how they did the workout in the 5 furlong portion of that exercise that morning. So it just shows you the thought and, you know, just how unbelievably amazing these trainers can be to me. I mean, it's such a science to these guys and what they do, and to be around some of the top trainers in the game that we've ever had. I mean, like I've always said, I feel Whittingham was the greatest, and he certainly did not go with this 5 furlong type situation as Barrera, but what Whittingham did was certainly worked, because he was the guy that excelled, whether it was dirt, turfs, long, short, or whatever. And the people that were around Whittingham, I mean, to almost a unanimous situation, will say he was the greatest trainer of all time. And Jay Hovday wrote a tremendous book on Charlie Whittingham, and if people are interested, I'm sure they can probably get that book at some way, shape, or form, and it's certainly worth reading if you get a chance.
John, I appreciate it, and terrific summer out at Del Mar. I know that if you saw the Joe Harper quotes, the attendance was off a little and handle was down, which they kind of anticipated. But overall, the most important part was a safe haven for everybody. And from that standpoint, a very successful summer. We'll talk next week. John, I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
John White, everybody. Let's take a break. About 20 into hour three. Graham Motion going to join us. And Graham with a couple of very nice performances. First time North America, Mississippi. won the Glens Falls on Saturday. That was terrific. And then down at Colonial later in the evening, I don't know if did Graham did they take the motion copter? What's the name of their what's the blue and the blue and red the Herringsworth Herringswell. Did they take the Herringswell helicopter or private jet down to New Kent from Saratoga? Graham Mosher joins us next at the races.
The latest racing news. It's at the races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years. We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Summer on Afternoon Delights, absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Five into hour three, Graham Mosher joining us, and a terrific weekend for Graham all over the place, and that included, of course, a Virginia Derby win for English B, who continues to craft a terrific year for Calumet, and first time North America and the Glens Falls, Mississippi, cleverly, cutely named, wins the Glens Falls, and that makes for a nice Saturday, and there were plenty of other good performances. Graham, welcome. Congratulations.
Hi, good morning, Steve. Thank you.
The key question I was asking as we were heading to the break was the Herring Swell helicopter standing by to take you from Saratoga to New Kent?
You know, I had a bit of a dilemma there, but I chose to go south instead of north. So Alice Clapham more than handled the arrangements in Saratoga.
Well, it worked out pretty well in both venues. Let's start actually with the first North America runner and Mississippi. And it's sometimes hard, Graham. Your numbers are very strong first time North America, but I think for handicappers, it's a little tricky to assess where they fit in a race like this. At first blush, some thoughts about what you thought you had coming into this race.
Yeah, I actually tried to enter in an allowance race earlier in the week, which didn't fill. They tried to use it a couple of times. Part of my reasoning was to keep her and Empress of the Nile separated, but also, I wanted to find a fairly conservative spot, if I could, for this filly to come into. They really liked her a lot last year, and her form had been very disappointing this year. So I thought it would be good to get her a confidence booster. But having said that, she had done everything very easily here in the morning. She'd breezed with some nice fillies and handled herself really well. So, I certainly felt good about running her. I guess the fact that her form had tailed off in Europe was what concerned me a little bit.
Andrew Stone breeds and owns Mississippi, and she was dropped in Kentucky. Was she developed in North America before she was sent to Europe? Do you know?
That's a good question. I mean, I trained her mother, Kichi, for Andrew.
Oh, yeah.
So, and I'm assuming she was probably brought up over there with the idea of racing over there. But I will say Andrew's been very clever about sending horses to me. He felt that Mississippi had kind of lost her way, and a change of venue, change of scenery might help her. And I think clearly the results are to be seen. And I think so often some of these European horses just seem to be they just fit into the American routine a little better. It's a little more straightforward what we do in the morning, and running on flat surfaces. A lot of them, it really helps.
Who was her trainer wasn't listed, in at least in my PPs. Who had her in Europe?
I should know that, and I do, but I'll have to scratch my head. Give me a second or two. But he was very much in on the decision-making. We all kind of have a group chat that we go over things, and, it just made a lot of sense to bring her over.
Give everybody some insight, Graham, into, you mentioned that you were going to look at an allowance race for her. She had been competing at a solid level. I mean, she had been very competitive in group twos, including at DeVille and Haydock, also at Newmarket actually as well. And she was beaten two lengths in a group two. So she clearly had quality form. And then those two off performances, at York and Haydock, and she got distanced essentially, and I guess that was the point when the decision was made to give her a fresh start.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think, like I say, they really liked her last year a lot, and her form had tailed off. So, they felt the ability was there, but for some reason she'd lost her way. So that sort of is what was the basis of the move.
Well, you end up in a situation here where you run 1-2. You mentioned Empress of the Nile. Was there any thoughts as to what you expected about how the race might unfold for both of them going in?
Not particularly. I mean, I knew she was going to break a step slow. I always, pop them out of the gate once before they run, and she was kind of slow here in the morning. But I think I find often with these European horses, it takes them a time or two to figure out. It's just so different over here, how we break so sharp over here, whereas in England, they really kind of just let them flop away from the gate, if you like. So I knew she'd probably be out the back. I thought Joelle gave her an exceptional ride. Every time I looked away to see where my other filly was, where Empress of the Mile was, I'd look back and Joelle had moved up two or three spots. So I thought he gave her a very clever ride, and probably that was a big part of why she won so comfortably.
Well, now you have the luxury, really, with both of them, because Empress of the Nile was only beaten three quarters of a length, and she was coming off of a nice allowance win, going a mile and 3/16. Lots of fall opportunities for mares like this. What are you looking at?
Look, I think we have to look at a race like the Flower Bowl or the E.P. Taylor. You know, she looks like that kind of filly to me, and obviously to run in a Grade One, and if she could win a Grade One, it would be great for her credentials.
What do you do with Empress?
You know, I'm going to have a little bit of a dilemma here because the E.P. Taylor really looks like it's going to suit a couple of the fillies I have. I have C.K.S. Buena, who's coming back from some time off over the summer. I have Tariga, who's going to run up there this next weekend. So, you know, I'm in a fortunate position to have three or four what appear to be pretty solid fillies that'll handle going a mile and a quarter. So good problems to have, but hopefully we'll try and split them up come October.
Well, that we'll come back to Saratoga and talk about some of the horses that succeeded coming out of the spa. But let's jump down to English B and talk about the Virginia Derby. Certainly, you know, this is a horse that has, I think, acquitted himself beautifully throughout the year. And great to have Colonial, of course, back on the, on the schedule. We talked to Mike Stidham yesterday about Carnival Colors with the mild upset of the Virginia Oaks. You were going to be certainly favored or one of the favorites. You ended up going off just slightly shorter than Tracksmith. Talk about English B coming into this spot.
Yeah, so just to go back to Mississippi, it was David Simcock that trained her.
And there we go.
Want to give him some credit because he was part of the decision making, and you know, it really helps for us when these fillies come over to make the decisions and kind of plot their future. English B. You know, I think it's interesting that both Michael Trombetta's horse and my horse came out of the Hall of Fame and went on to win races.
Yeah.
Kind of shows the caliber of competition that you're running against up there. But look, this horse has done very little wrong. He wasn't a particularly flashy horse as a two-year-old last year. That's why I started him off at Presque Isle. But I think he's just been an overachiever. I mean, every time I've stepped him up, he's handled it, except for perhaps the Belmont Derby, where a mile and a quarter might be a little bit beyond his reach. He's just a really cool horse to have around. He's a hard-knocking, hard-trying horse who constantly shows up.
He does have a bit of a pedigree for, you know, for tough, hard-trying in him. The English Channel, out of the Kitten's Joy mare, Calumet Homebred. We talked about him after he won the Murphy. I think it's pretty obvious. You look at the PPs, and the only, you know, the only off effort at all was the distance. You know, the Belmont Derby, the mile and a quarter. You know, and to some degree, it might have been that he just found himself a little too far back. I mean, maybe as he ages and matures, you get the chance to try him. A real route of ground. But for now, he seems deadly going this kind of a trip.
No, I think that's possible. And to be honest, apart from perhaps the Derby, you know, every time he has been beaten, it's only been by a length or two, and often it's come with a little bit of an excuse. So, look, he's the kind of horse that everybody would like to have. He just shows up every time, and he's just a very straightforward horse in the morning. Anybody can get on him. He's a neat horse to be around, and he's just tough. He's a tough racehorse.
Now you get that with English Channel, and I'm sure the dam contributes as well. Evil Kitten, the Kitten's Joy, and it's funny. I'm looking up and down his resume, Graham, and you talk about the Hall of Fame and Global Access, who of course won. We talked to Mike Trombetta yesterday, and to Mrs. Weber, we had on TV talking about her third Saranac in 9 years. Every race, it seems, that he's participated in, there's been some horses that went on to nice things. He found himself behind a thread of blue in an allowance race this winter.
No doubt. I mean, I think that's a very fair point. He's run against sort of the best in his division and always, you know, always held his own.
Well, how about going to Tampa on the Derby card and you run in the rather mundane $75,000 Columbia? Digital Age, of course, shows up there. Global Access was third. I mean, you know, here's a $75,000, you know, listed stake that nobody would look twice at as a, you know, as a fountainhead, and look what it's produced.
And we get beat a length and a quarter with a so-so trip, you know. So, I mean, it is fascinating when you go back and look at these races over the winter. So often this happens at Tampa when we all sort of pinpoint these races. Look, there's no secret that Tampa has a beautiful turf course, and it's very appealing for us to go over there with these nice horses, these nice turf horses. And I guess it shouldn't be a surprise that you end up having results like that.
What do you do with him? I'm trying to think. What is there at Keeneland for him?
You know, I haven't gotten too far ahead with him. I mean, I just feel like he's kind of had a long year, and I don't know how long he can keep running at that level. I think at some point here, he deserves a break. So it's a bit of a question mark as to whether we give him one more outing this year. I'd imagine he'll have one more outing before getting put away for 30, 40 days.
Well, while we're talking Virginia Derby, you did run a three of them in here and solidify and shoot in the breeze a little bit up the track, but why not try?
Yeah, I genuinely felt they belonged. In hindsight, you know, it looks like perhaps they didn't. But probably shooting the breeze was the biggest disappointment because I thought he sat in a great position. I thought West gave him a great ride. He was sitting right off English B. He just didn't finish up. I question if maybe the mile and eight is a bit beyond his scope. But he's an A other than, so if we're going to run him one more time this year, I'd love to maybe run him in an A other than at Keeneland, try and win that condition. And Solidify has just been a bit of a disappointment on the grass, and I think we're going to get him back and try him on the poly track back up at Woodbine later on in the month.
You sent off the third choice, Mercilla, this in the Oaks, and this one for Rebecca Hillen, and I see Sol is involved. Sol was involved in every single stake, I think, in the country this weekend, and also Wonder Stables. And I had Mike Stidham on yesterday, that Carnival Colors and Forrest Boyce, who you've used successfully. But Mercilla ran okay. She wasn't going to get to the winner.
I had dinner with Mike. He said he got a little opinionated on your show yesterday.
Well, I opened the door for him to talk about Chicagoland and the Arlington situation. He was terrific.
Well, he had a great weekend. I mean, what a weekend for Fair Hill. I haven't even counted up how many winners we had, you know, between Saratoga, Colonial, and elsewhere. I was pleased with Mercilla. I thought she ran very well. I kicked myself for running her on the dirt over the summer, which kind of set us back a little bit. I thought this was a good effort, and hopefully she can win one of these. I thought it was an encouraging performance.
What's the backstory? You and I have not talked about her, but she was an arch three-year-old that was a Keeneland yearling. I know, I see that dam, Junk in the Trunk. That was Lee Pacoy campaigned Junk in the Trunk, and started her career in Europe. What's the lineage here? How'd this all happen?
Yeah, I mean, this was another private purchase by Brad, who's so clever about picking up on these horses, Brad Weisbord. And that's how, obviously, Madicat got involved. Rebecca and Steve Hillen stayed in for a large piece of her, so they're very much involved in the decision-making. But she was, like I say, she was a private purchase after she broke her maiden.
Interesting. All right. Well, we'll see what you know. What we can expect down the road. What do you think with her? There again, three-year-old fillies, no shortage of opportunities for restricted company in the fall.
No, I mean there's some good races. I do think with these three-year-old races in the fall, there are still opportunities, but I think they become much tougher in the fall. You know, you've got the QE2 at Keeneland, which is a grade one. You have a race at Belmont the same day, and then you have the Pin Oak a week after the QE2. But these are solid races. I mean, these are going to be much more competitive fields, perhaps, than the Virginia Oaks was. But there's no reason to think she couldn't step up and be competitive in a race like the Pin Oak.
Well, you know, you mentioned, you referenced the weekend that the Fair Hill people had, and I do see, and I had not noticed originally, that Lefebvre had run up in the La Lorgnette on Sunday. Mike Trombetta was on with us, and as I mentioned, Mrs. Weber was on TV with us on Sunday. Super Escape upsets there, and you ran Lefebvre, and Trombetta was on yesterday. He's got Fair Hill horses, and so does Kelly Rubley was on with us, too. So, you're right. This was a huge Fair Hill weekend.
I'm a little bit offended that I was the last one you came to.
Well, I did have you penciled in for yesterday, and then I delayed.
I understand. No, I mean, it's ironic that Michael stabled right across from me here at Fair Hill, so I had to go all the way up to Canada to get beaten by him. But his filly ran an impressive race up there. I think Lefebvre will probably shorten her up next time. She won going 7/8. Last time she ran up there, she definitely handles the poly track. Or the Tapita, and we'll probably take her back up there in 5 or 6 weeks. There's another stake that comes up for 3 old fillies going 6.5 furlongs.
You also, I tell you what, you got beat by Fair Hill people. Kelly Rubley beat you in the Red Bank as well. Say the word.
Yeah, he was a little disappointing. I thought, you know, I really felt he would be competitive coming off the lure, which he didn't have a great trip. But look, Kelly's horse is a solid Group 2, you know, maybe even Group 1 type horse, and she does a great job with him, so it was certainly no disgrace to be beaten by him. But I was a little disappointed with Say the Word's performance. I think he probably, if anything, benefits from going a little further.
Now, Graham Motion with us. And, Graham, before we talk about some starters coming up later in the week, your opening day at Belmont, you're in the Christie Cat. We'll get to that kind of thing in a minute. Some Saratoga wrap-up, because you had a nice meet.
We did. I mean, I haven't actually counted up our previous meets, but I would imagine numbers-wise it's probably the best meet we've had or right up there. You know, you never know. I mean, last year we really struggled to win a couple of races up there, but things fell into place. And I think if you'd told me before the meet that I would win 3 stakes up there, I would have laughed. So it was very gratifying, and it's hard work by everybody, and it's great support from all the owners, you know. So I'm just very fortunate to be in that position.
Well, and beyond the stake winners, you know, Varenka and obviously Mississippi and et cetera, you also had some maiden players. What about Sharing? Talk about the satisfaction of Sharing's performance.
Yeah, she's a filly we liked a lot. I mean, she's a Maryland bred, so we kind of took a shot taking up there because we knew she'd be competitive in Maryland, but I thought she deserved to go to New York. I wasn't surprised that she handled the dirt as well as she did, because she handled it fine here in the morning. I would imagine we'll probably run her back on the grass, possibly at Laurel. There's a couple of two-year-old races later in the month that they raised the purses on at Laurel in order to try and make them sort of Breeders' Cup appealing, I think. So, you know, obviously we'd like to find a race for her that might get us to the Breeders' Cup.
And what about Varenka?
I mean, this filly, she kind of falls in that category with English B. She's just one hard-knocking, tough horse that shows up every time. I couldn't have been happy with her performance. She hasn't done much wrong this year, to be honest.
Well, let's turn our attention toward the week ahead. And I mentioned the Christie Cat, which opens the Belmont Championship meet, which may be 4 weeks. It may be a full 8 weeks. We don't know. As soon as Naira gets a handle on the construction down with the arena, we'll know more. But Queen of Bermuda, And we wish the best for everybody. That made me think of the Bahamas and the islands with the storm. But Joe Bravo aboard and the Christie Cat. What do you got here?
Yeah, probably a mistake last time to try and stretch her out. We just had always had in the back of our mind that we would try and stretch her out at some point. But clearly she didn't handle it. In fairness, the race up in Canada came up pretty solid last time. I believe Chad won it. With Seek and Destroy. But look, this filly, she ran very well in the Breeders' Cup last year against the boys, and she's been, you know, right there every time this year. We just haven't been able to get a nose in front, so hopefully this will be a good spot. I like the idea of 6 furlongs. It's hard to know weather-wise what's going to happen on Friday. At some point, I would imagine we're going to get some effects from the storm, so I just question a little bit if we're going to get to run on Friday on the grass.
Well, and that I imagine as early as tomorrow. Tomorrow's probably pretty quick because Colonial. I see you've got Peace Corp looking for a maiden breaker in the second at Colonial tomorrow.
Yeah, this filly's been frustrating. She shows a lot of ability in the morning. We had to do some throat surgery on her, which hopefully will help her this time out. You know, hopefully this is a good spot for her. She's a filly that we've always kind of had high hopes for that just hasn't quite, I guess, you know, to be fair, I haven't figured out exactly what she wants to do either. She's been a hard one to judge.
You've also got maidens, you got a pair entered, opening day at Laurel is on Friday. Did you run anything at Timonium?
I did not.
That's not right. You got to support the Timonium program.
I was tempted to. I had a filly who could have run in the stake on Saturday, but it's a tricky track. I think it's a track that, you know, your horses have got to be able to adapt to, and I'm afraid Georgianne will be upset with me, but I stayed away.
I've been pushing Timonium today. Kelly Rubley didn't run one either. She says she's never run
one. Shame
on
her. Yes. Shame on her.
But you must have brought the kids over the years to Timonium, to the fair.
I can't say I ever have, Steve.
Come on. That's not, you gotta take advantage. Trombetta has brought his kids. I guarantee you that.
I would imagine, but he's a local. He's a local boy.
He is a local guy. Talk about the first time starter for Mr. Campbell, the homebred, out of one of my absolute favorite fillies ever that Rusty Arnold had, Carlo Viveri, and the 3-year-old Scat Daddy filly, Mean Mary.
Well, tell me more about Carlo Viveri, because you probably know more about her than I do.
Oh, she was wonderful. I mean, she was terrific. Rusty, big dinoformer, big rangy monster. She was terrific. And I wonder if the Mean Mary is any reflection of the horse's personality. Is she tough to be around?
She is tough, yes. She really is. And she's big. So I would say she carries a lot of her traits. That's interesting.
There you go. That's got dinoformer written all over it.
You know, she's a filly that's taken a long time to get to the races, partly because of her toughness, and I think just because of her size, she wasn't one we could push early on. I would imagine she's probably going to end up on the grass, but she gets over the dirt just fine, and this seemed like a good way to get her started on Friday. Very unusual to get these races to fill. I mean, you cannot fill a maiden race on the dirt going long anywhere, girls or boys, so I kind of wanted to jump on the opportunity with these two fillies.
It's really true, actually, and we had one over the weekend at Saratoga. I think it was that Sunday, I think, and which Todd won. But when next time you see Rusty, you ask him about Carlo Viveri. She was an Ashland winner, among other things. And
was that when the Ashland was on the poly or on the dirt?
Oh, good question. It would have been, let's see, it would have been probably, she's been off the track at least 3 years, maybe more.
Yeah, so it may have been on
may
the
have been
poly.
May have been on the poly. So you may have to experiment around a little bit with her. But
yeah, like I say, I think in the future she's going to be on the grass, I would imagine. But I think, you know, I think she's showed enough ability to be competitive on Friday. My other filly, Perfect Kind, she acts like she could be stakes caliber in the morning. just been very frustrating to figure out what she wants to do. But I think after the winner of the Travers, we decided to keep this filly on the dirt by Noble Mission. And I thought she ran well enough at Delaware last time. Maybe the little extra distance on Friday will help her.
Well, and you know, you talk about stakes. The easy limit. No, I'm thinking. I was thinking of the, there must be a different limit that this was not an Alan Jerkins. I'm thinking of a Jerry Shields horse.
Well, this is Mr. Shields bred this filly, so I think you probably are on the right track.
Oh, all right. Any limit. I bet you this is easy limit. I bet you this is a sister of any limit.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, there we go. And I just pulled up easy limit. She never made the races, but a daughter of Passing Shot. So this is, you're right. This is a horse that has got every reason. There's some Alan Jerkins success, 600,000 earner the hard way. Back 20 years ago for Jerry Shields. Look at that. Like a steel trap, Graham. It's like a giant onion, this head. The layers of all this nonsense. You absorb it like a sponge.
It's impressive, Steve.
No, it's not. It's like one of those weird things this is from people who studied baseball cards as a kid. Those of us that are, did you have cricket cards and soccer cards when you were growing up?
I think we probably did have soccer cards, actually. You might be right.
And that's how you get, you know, the head for numbers and statistics, and you remember, you know, who played for who and what uniform they wore. Who's your favorite soccer player growing up?
Billy Bramner, he played for Leeds, and I think he was captain of England. But I always supported Leeds. My mom was a big Leeds supporter, so I was a Leeds fan. And back in the day, they were the top of, you know, they were right up there at the top of the league.
Before United took over?
I guess. You know, I don't follow it as closely as I used to. Everybody around here follows it religiously. I wish I could follow it closely.
Well, I'm gonna show you how everybody's mind works. What number did he wear?
Oh gosh, no, I don't know that.
No,
that's
all right. Oh, I love it. Well, Graham, you've actually taken us right to the top of the wrap up the show. Any final thoughts about the summer and the season before the fall sets in?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's been a good summer for us. I think it's been a good summer in general for racing. I think it was great to see what went on at Del Mar. They had they appear to have had a great meet, which after all they went through in California, I think that's really refreshing. And I tell you what, to go into Saratoga every morning and see lines out the gate and to see the crowds you get on some of those days, it's just, you know, horse racing's okay. We just need to take care of the little things better and do a better job. But we're going to be okay.
Well, and you're the second person. The whole show this morning started on that same kind of a note. Don Little Jr. said the same thing, that he feels that the industry is a lot healthier than anybody wants to give it credit for, and that things are okay.
We just need to clean up our act and take care of things better and take care of even the little things. You know, we can do things so much better.
Well, certainly your operation and the way in which you interact with the public are both when it comes to the graciousness of the way you respond to some ugliness when you have the opportunity to express your opinion on controversial issues, and then the way in which you and your staff, you know, show such appreciation for the fans and the players around the game. Always a pleasure, Graham, to congratulate you and have these opportunities to talk.
Well, you're nice to say it. And, you know, although it does generate some negativity, you wouldn't believe how many people come up to me and, you know, say they appreciate when I speak my mind. And, you know, walking out of Saratoga after winning a couple of races on a Saturday afternoon and, you know, having people come up to you constantly and congratulate you, it's very gratifying, very reassuring. You know, the public really does follow racing in that circle, and it was great to be a part of it again this summer.
Grand Motion, everybody, and a lot of nice horses heading for fall assignments. Graham, continued success. I know we'll talk soon.
Thank you, Steve.
Grand Motion, and I could have brought up King Zachary, who won the Birdstone, and other maiden winners from all over the place. You know, Graham, fourth conversation in 2 days with somebody that is poised at Fair Hill to be able to, you know, basically run anywhere. From Presque Isle, I mean, just look at this. Presque Isle, Woodbine, Monmouth, Delaware, Colonial. Well, I'm sure he ran something. I know he ran at Parks yesterday with a couple of horses in the stakes. So you get a real understanding as to the benefits of being positioned right there at Fair Hill. And, you know, right off the highway and virtually anything. And actually, I just noticed a couple other horses I didn't even bring up with Graham. I forgot to bring up Nakamura, who I liked that allowance winner from 2 weeks ago or so. We'll see what's next. That's another Maryland bred and an Animal Kingdom, which has obviously got to be close to Graham's heart. Well, we're close to wrapping up, and I had other potential visitors lined up, and I guess we'll save those for tomorrow. And we didn't get to Dick Powell. We'll get to Dick tomorrow to talk a little bit of Presque Isle and more. You know, we're always one day, whenever you have the Monday holiday, it always throws you off a day. Andy Serling tomorrow as well to wrap up Saratoga and to look ahead to Belmont. And Graham brings up a good point with the storm. It'll another couple of days, it'll work its way up the coast. So we may end up with that. We may end up with a little bit of residual stuff getting into the later on into the fall. Jolene, get water. Ship us. Send us some of yours, Jolene. pretty good. We'll keep wrapping up, and we still have got all kinds of people to reach out to. I wanted to get to John Sheriffs, never got to John today, Baffert as well. And moving day is always tough, too, as Barnes pack up and head from Saratoga. They head south. From Del Mar, they head north. We're going to head out into the Monday of racing. Let's see what we got for you. Let's see today. What do we got? This is the third already? Yes. Indiana. Oh, and I think actually. Yeah, I that's another victim today that we didn't get to. We'll get to Bill Downs tomorrow. We got to get to Bill because of we were off a day on the holiday. But Indiana this afternoon. And what else? I imagine Finger Lakes is running right today. If you think Finger Lakes has got to have a Tuesday card, don't they? Yeah, Finger Lakes today, Fort Erie. Just kind of thumbing through, see what else is out there. Mountaineer, Parks, of course, Philly, that's right, Tuesday. Prairie Meadows, Presque Isle, Retama. Is that enough? That'll keep you busy. Thistledown. There it is. There's your action for a Tuesday. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9, everybody. Thanks to Joe and Don Little Jr., John White, Graham Motion, Kelly Rubley. Talk to you tomorrow.